From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Caudette. This is Idaho Matters. Since July, the United States has been seeing a steady uptick in COVID cases, leaving some to wonder if this new variant is going to make for a difficult fall and winter. Well, on Monday, the Food and Drug Administration greenlighted an updated COVID booster. So is this our new normal? Every year, we get an annual COVID vaccine. Here to answer those questions and others is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. He was also a member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
And remember, folks, if you have a public health question, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Okay, Dr. Pate, let's just start with this this new recommendation for this COVID shot, because my understanding is it's, I guess, what's the difference between a booster and an annual vaccine?
So it's really not a comparison between booster and annual. The annual is the booster. The difference is between your primary series and the boosters. So the primary series is what many of us did way back in 2021, where we got two or three shots of the mRNA vaccine that provided the first exposure to our immune system, if we hadn't previously been infected, to develop an antibody response and a T cell response that would protect us. Then, because we've known that at least the antibody response wanes and wanes relatively quickly, that's why you then give a booster. And the booster is to re-expose the immune system to that antigen, is what we call it, a protein, that will then trigger the immune system to respond again and kind of build up levels, if you will.
So how well will this new booster work? Do we know that yet? Because my understanding, Dr. Pate, is that because we saw these cases rising, it was back in the summer where they started putting this this formulation together with the hope that it would target these subvariants that were dominant in the summertime.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I will admit I was a bit skeptical because the version that the FDA advised the pharmaceutical makers to use, I thought would probably come and go by then. And in fact, it certainly has come and gone here in, at least if we look at the wastewater here in Ada County. That strain that this is based on is almost gone. Mm-hmm. It's down to about 9% of the samples. I suspect it's lower now. However, surprisingly, and a good surprise this time, when tested against all of these other major dominating variants right now, it's showing very, very good activity. So it does look like it's a very good match, a very good decision to make it around this particular protein. It could be, we're going to have to see what happens as this virus continues to evolve, because we allow it to continue to infect so many people. It's going to continue to evolve. And we'll have to watch to see, does it get to a point again where it starts becoming more able to evade our immune system, and then we'll need a new version of the booster. So right now, it looks like a good match. It looks like a good solution, and it works against all of the currently spreading ones, as well as some of the variants that I'm watching across the world that haven't really made their way into the United States yet, but I fully expect will. So it's a very good outlook right now.
So Dr. Pate, let's talk numbers here in the sense of, you know, we saw this uptick of cases. The latest data we have comes from the week of August 26th. And at that point, deaths from COVID had increased by nearly 18% from the previous week. But You know, in comparison, those numbers did remain relatively low. Officials say that the United States averaged just more than 600 deaths per week in August. But if you compare that to the same time in August 2022, that was 3,000 per week. In August of 21, that was 14,000 per week. 600, though, is still not necessarily a small number if we're talking every week, Dr. Pate. So with that said, with this new vaccine, what is the recommendation? I mean, should everyone be getting this, and should we be thinking about this as kind of we do the flu season, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. The first thing I would say is that you described this well. There is no question cases are up. And although we don't have as good a surveillance for cases today as we did in the past, we still have ways to estimate what the amount of infections are in the United States. Mm-hmm. And they're very high. To put it into perspective, if you look at the pandemic since March of 2020 to now, the rate of infections that are occurring right now, it's greater than it has been 70% of the pandemic. So, certainly we had those big waves towards the end of 2021 and beginning of 2022 when our hospitals were overwhelmed, those kind of things. We're not at that level, but the infection rate is quite high. Now, the big difference is, although we've got so many people getting infected, we have relatively fewer that are getting very sick, very ill, ending up in the hospital, dying. It's still too large of a number, but when we compare it to where we've been before, what we have been fortunate is that not the antibody part of our immune response, but this so-called cellular immunity that we have, which is what we believe is protecting us from severe disease, that lasts a long time, it appears. And that can be induced either by infection or vaccination or both. And now that, you know, essentially everybody has either been vaccinated, infected, or both, what is happening is we're not seeing the amount of people, even though they're getting infected, go on to have severe disease or end up in the hospital or dying. So that part's good. Getting to your question about the recommendation, if you just look at, well, severe disease and dying, if you look at who that is, then you would say, well, we should only vaccinate the elderly, and particularly the highest group of deaths is in those over 75. However, I think that really misses the mark. Because two things. One, people may be surprised that if you look at hospitalizations today, the highest group of people, the highest percentage of an age group of our population being hospitalized is those over 75, as I said. But the next highest group is those that are less than 6 months of age. And I suspect almost none of your viewers or listeners know that. And so we can't take this for granted. The other thing that we have to keep in mind, and Gemma, you and I have talked about this for 3 years, to focus just on hospitalizations or death is missing a very important aspect of this disease, and that is that it can cause problems down the road. We've already seen long COVID. We've seen a lot of other post-COVID conditions. We previously talked on the show about how COVID can accelerate dementia. We've mentioned about the fact that it can cause people to develop diabetes. And so there are still things worth trying to prevent infection, because these other problems, although they don't kill you or you don't end up in the hospital, they can be long-term chronic illnesses, impairments to working and doing your other activities. And so there's still I was very hopeful that the committee yesterday would say everyone over 6 months could get vaccinated. And I was gratified to see that is exactly what they said. Mm-hmm. So I think that's good.
And my understanding, Dr. Pate, is that these vaccines should be available by the end of the week.
Well, we hope. So here's the deal. So now that the CDC director signed off on these recommendations yesterday, now, theoretically, they can ship today. Now, the problem that could slow it down a little bit is that you remember up to now, the government's been paying for vaccines. Mm-hmm. And now it's the commercial market has to pay for it. So we may see some people that previously offer vaccines that won't now. For example, if you are a doctor's office and you're ordering vaccine now, you may have to buy it in bulk. And that can be very expensive because we've already heard from Pfizer and Moderna that their vaccines are going to cost $120 to $130. And so small physician practices may not buy in bulk because they don't know if there's going to be the demand and they're going to use it and they'll get stuck with it. Now, the good news is I still think the hospitals, the large medical groups, you know, for example, like primary health medical group, those, they'll still get it. And I do think they could have it as soon as maybe the end of this week or beginning of next week. But we'll just have to see because it's now going to be a thing that you have to submit to your insurance or you have to pay for. And the other thing is, I think it will show up in the pharmacies fairly quickly. The big chains of pharmacies will have that vaccine fairly soon. Hopefully, maybe this weekend, but I would certainly expect them to have it next week.
Dr. Pate, I have to say, we are getting lots of listener questions in. So let's get to them. So Tiffany wrote in asking, on a recent show, you said almost everyone should get the updated COVID vaccine as soon as it's available. Is that true for those of us that received a second bivalent booster in May? We had planned to wait until October or early November so we wouldn't have a waning immunity at holiday time.
Yes, Tiffany, that's a great question. So first of all, the reason I qualified it and said most people is that we are having a big surge of infections now. Many people have not been vaccinated since last year, and those people, to my distress, are also being exposed because they're not taking precautions, or maybe they're not precautions in their workplace, or they have kids in school. So yes, those people, I would recommend go ahead and get vaccinated as soon as they can. The people I would say hold off are... One is, for example, if you have been vaccinated within the last, let's say 2 to 3 months or so, I would wait just a little bit. It looks like from some of the studies that the ideal spacing from a previous vaccine would be about 4 months, maybe as long as 6, but certainly 4 months. And I would apply that to a previous infection as well. So if those are the case, then I would put it off just a little bit. The other thing is, if you, on the other hand, are somebody who takes lots of precautions, you limit the people you're around, you work in a safe environment, you don't have kids in day school or school, public school, you wear masks regularly when you go out, those things, you might want to wait for one of two things. One, it's still just a little early to take the flu vaccine, but we just got a study that showed if you get your COVID booster and your flu vaccine at the same time, you may get an extra boost in your protection from the COVID shot. So that could be one consideration to wait. And again, we also have seen that if you get your COVID booster in the same arm that you got your primary series, you may actually get a boost there as well, for reasons that make sense, but I won't go into right now. And then the other thing is, if you're planning international travel or a lot of travel and a lot of get-togethers for the holidays, but you can protect yourself now then you might want to delay getting the COVID shot till closer to that travel or closer to the holidays. I would do it at least 2 weeks before you do make the travel or get together with family, but probably not more than about 4 weeks ahead. But that's if you are willing to take steps to protect yourself between now and then so you don't get infected.
So Dr. Pate, Sherry wrote in, she says, I've always thought that I could rely on Paxlovid or some other antiviral to help me if I got COVID. But Paxlovid is only effective if administered in the first 3 or 4 days of illness. And this new COVID variant doesn't give a positive test for 5 or 6 days. So does this mean that antivirals are no longer useful?
It does not. The Paxlovid is still very, very effective and useful. Your listener is exactly right that you do need to start it early, because the way that an antiviral works is by cutting down on the viral replication, which that's occurring, and you don't want it to get too far along. However, the reason the tests are not picking up as early is because people with these newer variants, especially probably because they have been vaccinated or have been infected or both, it's not growing up as fast a rate as it was with the previous early strains we dealt with in the first couple of years. So what I would do, first of all, one thing is the FDA has now approved Paxlovid, so it is doctors have more latitude. And if it seems very clear that you likely have COVID, even though you're testing negative. So let's say, Gemma, that your husband was to come down with COVID. He tests positive. Mm-hmm. And the next day or two, you start developing symptoms. And you haven't really, there's no reason to suspect you have anything else. We still don't have much flu or anything else. That would be a good time to say, even though your test is negative, it's pretty likely you've got COVID and we could start the Paxlovid. The other thing is generally that those tests, we can get an extra day early detection by doing the PCR test. There is one brand that you can get as home. Otherwise, you're going to probably have to go to the doctor or whatever, but they can do the PCR testing and you'll turn positive faster on that. But the Paxlovid is still very useful. I do want to give a warning to some listeners. I've been contacted by some people who have said there is a doctor group that is not prescribing Paxlovid anymore. I think that is a big concern. I don't understand the rationale. And if that's the case, you may want to consider making some kind of a change.
So Dr. Pate, speaking of Paxlovid, is it still covered by insurance, or has that changed just like this new COVID booster is changing?
Well, it is.
I shouldn't say covered by insurance. It's covered by, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. It is covered by insurance, but these things used to be free. They are not now.
Right.
So if you are not insured, you may have to pay out of pocket. So my apologies.
No, you've got it right, Gemma. So on the vaccines, if you have an Affordable Care Act compliant plan, which most people do, not everybody, but most people do, that plan will cover all of the cost of your vaccine. So you shouldn't have to pay anything. The problem is people that don't have ACA compliant plans, and there's a handful of different kinds, or people that are uninsured. On the vaccine, if you can't afford it, then there are providers in a program called Bridge Access, which will help pay for the vaccine if you can't afford it. So we can, you know, cover that another time, but don't give up. On the drug, the Paxlovid, you're right. Because it was previously covered by the government, but isn't now, it will be subject to co-pays, deductibles, those kind of things, and whatever the plan design out-of-pocket expenses. But you shouldn't, if you have a health plan, you shouldn't have to pay the full cost.
Okay. Nikki sent this question in. She says, Dr. Pate, have you heard anything in your research related to allergies developing after contracting COVID? I have never had any food allergies, yet 2 weeks ago, I experienced anaphylactic shock immediately after eating kiwi. The ER doctor identified me with a fatal food allergy to kiwi. I realized I had not eaten kiwi since before contracting COVID in May of 22. Yet I had eaten it periodically throughout my life without the slightest symptom. I did read that COVID can elevate histamine levels and may impact allergies.
Yeah. So I'm terribly sorry that you've developed this condition. We don't know for sure that it's COVID because some people do develop allergies later in life. However, there are a bunch of reports of very similar things. Now, I haven't seen a clinical study. I can't tell you how common it is. I can't tell you that it's a cause and effect rather than an association or something. However, yes, I have been seeing many reports of similar things. And there is a condition that there is mounting evidence that COVID can cause called a mast cell activation syndrome. And that can certainly cause distressing, overwhelming allergic type reactions. So yes, it is certainly possible. And one thing I would certainly recommend to you, if you haven't already done it, is to get in to see a allergist to see what we can do to help you, especially since it's so severe when that happens. Of course, you can avoid kiwi if you want to take that route, but an immunologist could, or an allergist could certainly help you.
So Dr. Pate, we only have about 2 minutes left. So before I let you go, can we just quickly go over the recommendations for this new COVID booster that should hopefully be available by the end of the week, early next week? Who can get it, maybe when you should be getting it, and the fact that, you know, it's the government is no longer giving it out for free. So check your insurance.
Yes. So let's start at the lower ages and go up. If you have a child that is 6 months of age or older, they are eligible for this new vaccine. They're only eligible for the mRNA vaccines, which are the Pfizer and the Moderna. But if your child is young, we are getting more and more suggestions of potential severe problems later in life. So I would certainly consider, talk to your pediatrician, talk about getting vaccinated. Everybody above 6 months can get vaccinated. However, with either of the mRNA vaccines, there is a new one, Novavax, that hasn't come out yet, but the committee yesterday already gave their blessing for it. So as soon as it's ready, that's one that's not made with mRNA. We don't know what the age restriction on that is going to be. My guess is you're going to have to be at least 12 years old. They might say you have to be over 18, but that will be a new option you have. And the data for it looks actually really good, and you can mix and match. We certainly want to make sure that people in the age group 35 to 50, please consider getting this vaccine as a booster or getting a new, starting the vaccine if you haven't been vaccinated. We are seeing lots of problems in that age group over time, serious problems. So get that. And of course, the most vulnerable people are those that are elderly, particularly those that are in nursing homes or other assisted living programs. So please, everybody over 6 months, you're eligible.
All right, Dr. Pate, as always, thank you so much. Dr. Pate will be back with us next week. Remember, if you have questions about public health, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.